What's up, everybody? We are back again with another episode of Octagon Control. Chris Manning, my co-host, will join us soon. But first, we have Jason Adams. He is running the Promoting Women in Bodybuilding. He runs two shows. He is the co-host of the Promoting Real Women radio show, Promoting Women in Bodybuilding Fitness and MMA. He runs that website. He is a media member and attends a lot of the NAAFS events, and a nutritionist, or at least helps with the weight cuts of a lot of amateur fighters. Jason, how are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, you and I, we were at the last NAAFS events. I saw, you know, an article you wrote. You were giving some live results of a full amateur card. I really enjoyed going to those fights, mainly because we get to see guys that are up and coming. What do you like about those as opposed to the all pro or the pro amateur cards that we see sometimes?
I'm actually, you know, pretty much the way you described it. And, you know, everyone gets excited for the big all pro type cards, but I actually like the all amateur ones, and I wish more people did go cover those, because, as you said, you get to see ahead of time who the future stars are going to be, who the guys who have the big potential are, and, you know, who's going to be those guys who might, you know, in 3-4 years be in the big fights on the pro cards.
Yeah, and, you know, you bring up the in 3-4 years who will be on the big cards. Someone that you're very close with, someone I've grown close to in the past couple of years, Jessica I fought last week. I know you and I both have a little bit of a bias. You and I actually scored it the same way, but overall feeling from that fight, overall just sort of impression.
Like you said, a little bit biased. I did give Jessica the first and the third round. I said it at the time. There's a lot of people saying she got robbed, and it seems to me, it killed me to say it. I don't think you can say it was a robbery. I think the first round was very, very close. So I'm not going to call it a robbery, and I'm not going to bash Alexis either, because I actually get along with Alexis. But I think the problem is that the judges scored that last-minute takedown in the first round, and while she got the takedown, didn't do anything with it. And to me, that's giving a little bit too much credit to, you know, the takedown just because she ended the round on top. And, you know, Alexis landed more strikes in the first round, too, but not the damaging ones that Jessica landed.
Yeah, and, you know, I think you and I are in the same boat when it comes to that. I scored it for Jessica 29-28 the same way you did, but I'm not willing to call it a robbery. I think it was close, and you brought up the takedown. I think that's exactly what it comes down to, how judges view takedowns. Jessica was clearly winning the fight on the feet. You know, the second round obviously went to Alexis, but I think the first round came down to how you determine a takedown. And I don't think she did enough damage to do it. But in a way, and maybe I'm looking big picture here, and I don't know if you'll agree, but I think it, with how thin the women's division is right now when it comes to the UFC, maybe this is a good thing. Maybe it slows down a little bit. It allows Jessica to develop more and get a few more UFC fights under her belt, as opposed to if she won this fight, you know, we might be talking title shot right now.
I think that's a very, don't know the word, but I think that's well said. I think, too, is Jessica's one of the younger ones of the females in that division. I mean, not Ronda, but a lot of them. And she's the one who has, to me, the long-term potential. And I don't think, she wants to win. You obviously want to win. I don't think that this is a big, puts any big halt on any progress she's going to make. I think she's going to be around for a while. And I think just about any one of those girls in that division, Jessica can hang with them now. And in a couple of years, I see her surpassing most of them.
Yeah, and, you know, the other thing I think that we have to look at, That was her second fight at 135 pounds. She's been a 125er a majority of her career. And while that was a tough weight to get down to, and she looks more comfortable at 35, it's still something you have to get used to going with the bigger fighters as opposed to when you're the bigger one.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Everyone, when she first got signed and was going up to 135, everyone was talking about, is it going to be hard for her to fight at 135? She's going to be small. No, she's not wasn't going to be small because most of these people, Jessica was fighting people that were missing weight and, fighting at catch weights. And by the time they got in the cage, Jessica was 9 times out of 10 the bigger fighter. And now, like you said, now she's got to get used to, not being the biggest one every time she fights.
Yeah, and, I'm sure you and I could talk about this for a while, but before we do move on, I sort of had one fight in mind. Tell me what you think of it, and you send me one that you had. I like the idea of the Misha Tate-Liz Carmouche loser as Jessica's next fight. I think it's a good, in the so-called ranking system that we have in place with the UFC, I think it's a good number matchup, and I think it's one that keeps her with a solid name fighter, but it's definitely a winnable, and it's a solid fight that can help her move up.
I think both whoever that would be, that would make sense. The other one I wouldn't rule out would be if Shayna Baszler beat Sarah Kaufman, I wouldn't be surprised if Shayna and Jessica were matched up.
Yeah, that would definitely be a fun fight. But moving on to this weekend's card, you and I will both be attending this. You are actually skipping the Arnold to go to it. So.
Which is killing me.
Oh, yeah. Kudos to you. I'll be there tomorrow, so I'll let you know how it goes.
Thanks.
But, NAAFS First All-Pro Card, Driven MMA is the name of the event. And, there's a couple guys that I've trained with. There are some, UFC and Bellator veterans. And then there's a fighter making her professional debut, one that you have started to cover closely, Jessica Zamchik. And for those who don't know her, she's won her last two fights in Tough Enough, which is one of the elite amateur events, I would argue. What should fans look for when it comes to Jessica this weekend?
I have watched almost every one of her fights, and Jessica, she was always, for lack of a better term, just a badass. She can, you wanted to go to the ground, she'll go to the ground with you. If you wanted to stand, she'll stand with you. But now, since she's gone to evolve, she's not just that going in there to fight. She's going in there, she's a lot more technical now, so I think she's to me the best amateur female in the country. I will say that. I cover the sport. I cover female amateurs. Jessica is the best. And I think a lot of that is going to evolve. She's working now. She used to work with strictly a boxing coach. And now she's with Steve Tracek. And her she's training Muay Thai now. And just technically, she is a million times better. And that's saying something considering already an outstanding fighter.
Yeah, I've been to Evolve. I've trained at Evolve a couple times, and just even before the smoker that took place last weekend that I was involved in, she was there early hitting mitts with Steve, and you can just see how improved and how crisp her stand-up is now.
Yeah, absolutely, and I've told her that after her last probably three fights how much better her stand-up is. And I think that's really saying something, considering she already had good stand-up before she got to Evolve, but now it's just excelled. I told someone not long ago, actually, before I knew 100% that she was turning pro, that if you look at, I'm not going to say the top five, but you look 5 through 10 at 145 in the pros, she could hang with them now, and she hasn't even had a pro fight.
Yeah, and she's going to 135 now. She's going up against Summer Bradshaw. Definitely should be an interesting fight. And the other thing with Evolve I like to point out is, they have such a, Steve Tracek, unbelievable coach. And John Cook, I think, does very well, too. And even their some of their professional fighters are great cornermen. Kyle Rozewski, I've watched corner a ton of those amateur fighters, and he does an outstanding job also. So I think it's sort of the evolved mentality that we see a lot of these guys really well-educated and very intelligent when it comes to MMA, as opposed to just going in there and, you know, looking for a finisher, just going to brawl.
Right, and I think that's a big thing with Jessica, too, is now she feels more like she's part of a team, and I think that really helps her. It's, you know, you go to an NAAFS fight or go anywhere, most gyms, you know, a couple of the team members might come out. If you go to, if there's an evolved person on the card, there might be one person fighting, and they might be the opening fight, but that whole team is there supporting them. And I think that's really been big for Jessica, too, is that now she just feels part of something.
Now, another fighter, I know you're very close with his wife, Antonio Castillo. Nicole is the matchmaker for the NAAFS. He's obviously done very well in the NAAFS. He's won his last two or three fights, I believe. And the fights that I've seen, just a suffocating wrestling game, very powerful. You know, what should we look to see from him in this fight?
Well, I think one good thing for Tony is, you know, he started going to, I think it's the Midwest Training Center or whatever it is in Chicago. And if you saw his last fight, Tony almost sounds like I'm knocking him, and I'm not. I'm actually seeming to a compliment. But it used to be he would use his wrestling, you know, like you said, just smother, get on top, and be happy to grind out that decision. That last fight, as soon as he got it down, he was looking to finish. And I think that's a very big thing for him. And everyone knows when you're going to wrestle Tony that he's going to go for a takedown, and everyone says they're going to stop the takedown, and somehow they still end up on the ground. So I think it's a very different Tony Castillo, and I think this actually, where people may be not used to look forward to so much to a Tony fight because it was all wrestling, and like, unless you're a hardcore fan, you don't enjoy the wrestling. But I think it's a little different now, and I think he's making it more exciting and willing to go in there and go for that finish.
Yeah, you know, I would agree with your suffocating style and the decision. I remember attending an event in Columbus with the NAAFS. He out-wrestled the guy for three rounds, and one of the criticisms I heard from another coach that was there was he had the opportunity to finish. He didn't take it, though. He was just utilizing the top game to grind out a decision. So you're saying we should expect to see a much more exciting, if you're one of the fans' point of view, and a much more aggressive Antonio Castillo.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that was the fight. Like I said, he got the TKO. He used his wrestling to take it down, but didn't just keep wrestling. He got aggressive, and he started landing strikes from the top. And, you know, Tony's got aspirations to go to big organizations, like everybody does. And I think going up to Midwest Training Center is really a big step. And that, and I think another impressive finish is something very important to him. So I expect Tony to go in for a kill in this one.
Now, another fighter on the card, George Comer. Obviously, I have an extreme amount of bias as I train with him at Griffin Roll. He's going up against Anthony Morgan. I love that fight. George, you know, a former Division III wrestler at Mount Union. How much have you seen from him that makes him an interesting fighter to watch? He's won two straight amateur titles when he was an amateur, but what else should we look for?
Well, George is one of those people that, to me, even when he was an amateur, his style was more suited for pro rules. So George has the really good wrestling, too, and I think, you know, he can get the takedowns, and I think with the pro rules, being allowed to throw elbows and everything, I think he's going to be a better pro than he was an amateur, and that's saying something, because as an amateur, you know, no one's touching him. And I think his stand-up has improved a lot. His last couple fights that I saw, you know, he was getting in there and mixing it up. And I'm actually really interested in this fight. I think this is one of two fights that I'm actually predicting to be fight of the night. And I think an impressive win for George, now that all the German titles, the NAAFS titles, are kind of going to be gone and they're going to create new champions. I think one or two impressive wins for George, and I think he's a legit, you know, title contender.
Now, what do you know about his opponent, Anthony Morgan? He's 3-0. He's undefeated. He fights out of Dayton. What do you know about him?
I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and say I know a ton about him, but I do know that I've talked to people about him, and, you know, they say he's legit. I'm always hesitant to say too much, like, when I don't know for no positive about a person, but I know he's a finisher. I believe, don't quote me on this, but I believe he's finished all three of his fights, submissions, no later than the second, don't quote me on that. And he's coming from a really good school, a gym that a lot of people around here might not know about. It's a really, really good gym. And I think since the Clint Musser fight, I think this is going to be the toughest test that George has had.
Now, before we let you go, one more fight on this card that we haven't talked about that maybe, you know, isn't one of the top three fights or the bigger fights. What's one that we should really watch out for, that we should look out for and be excited for?
I'll tell you right now, I'm going to say two. One, I'm a little biased. I'm just going to mention John Hawk, because John's from the gym I train at, so I've got to mention him. Him and Blake Penn, I think, are going to just beat the hell out of each other until someone falls. But my fight of the night pick is Kyle Rozewski and Dustin Kempf. Dustin does not know how to have a boring fight. And I think moving to 145, going back to 145, because when he fought Isaiah Chapman, he had Isaiah in trouble. And I think moving back to 145, he's not going to lose the strength that he lost cutting to 135. And Kyle has become a much better fighter. And, you know, when you look at their records, they're both 500. But I think this is my fight of the night. I think it's going to be exciting. And, you know, Dustin Kemp fights, sit and watch it, because it's going to be a fun fight.
Yeah, and, you know, I've interviewed Kyle. I've worked with Kyle before. Other than having an extremely outgoing personality, the man can fight. You know, we talked during an interview. Such a huge change since he's came to Evolve. He has a legitimate corner, and I think we see that with a lot of guys that come to Evolve, but he's made such improvements since coming here.
Absolutely. That's great. You know, that's what I said. I said, I had Nicole on my show last night, and I said, it's two guys who are both much better than their records say they are.
Now, before we let you go, I mentioned before you work with a lot of amateur fighters, helping them with their weight cuts. Who's someone that you work with that we should look out for?
Well, there's actually two I'm going to say. First, I'm going to, if she gets a fight soon, I'm actually going up to Michigan to work with Kelly Warren, who's one of my favorite pro fighters, so I'm super excited about that. So I'm going to get my cheap plug in for Kelly. There's two, though, I would say Ashley Hawkins. Ashley has been out for a while. She's got a lot going on in her life. She's actually, her last fight, she fought Alana Jones before Alana went pro, and Jessica I actually cornered her for that. I think Ashley, and she's young, she's, I think, 23, got all the potential in the world. And then there's another one who's actually in Kansas, Rach Wiley. She lost her first fight. She got choked out, and she's won her next four. And she's actually possibly going to be in a tournament in Kansas City where the winner gets a pro contract. She's a 19-year-old. Her first fight was when she turned 18. And just at 19, what she's doing is amazing, and I think Rach Wiley is someone that's going to be a very big star in the sport.
Definitely high praise from you. And before we let you go, where can we find you? Twitter, Facebook, all that jazz.
I'll tell you how I say it at the end of my show every day. If you want, I'm on Twitter. It's at JasonDBK. But if you're my Facebook friend, don't bother following me, because my Twitter and my Facebook are linked. I don't use my Twitter very much. So I just post on Facebook and it goes on Twitter. My fan page on Facebook, I'm going for the longest name ever on a fan page, so it's Promoting Women in Bodybuilding, Fitness, and MMA. We got like 30,000 likes on there.
12 and, more and you hit 33,000.
There you go. So, and, you know, we have our shows every... on Tuesday nights, me and Jillian Revelle, she's an IFBB pro, we have an all-fitness show. On Wednesdays, me and whoever I can find do a half-MMA, half-fitness show. Thursdays, Jessica Philippus does the MMA Moms, where they talk to fighters who are moms. And on Sundays, Sarah McLeod, and who has fought for NASA twice, and Sarah Goodwaxen do their MMA show. And those are all on Blog Talk Radio. Just look up Promoting Real Women Radio.
Well, hey, it was great having you on. You gave us a lot of insight about this card this weekend. I can't wait to see you Saturday, and I'll talk to you soon, man. Thanks for coming on.
All right. My pleasure. Have a good night.
You too. And we're back, and we're joined by Chris Manning after the interview. Thanks again to Jason Adams for coming on, breaking down the professional fight card that takes place this week in Canton. Now, we had an event last week, UFC 170. Rousey obviously retained her title. Cormier ran through his opponent, and there were some good fights. We started to get more finishes, but really the big news of this week is TRT is now banned in Nevada by the State Athletic Commission. It looks like the UFC will sort of follow suit when it comes to that. Chris, you have an interesting prediction, and maybe give us your thoughts on this also.
I am very much glad that it's gone. This is, I think, one of the, at least in my time as an MMA fan and someone involved in following the sport, I think this is a big day in history. I think this is a monumental. I think it kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, I didn't even know if they were talking about it. To be honest, I'd see on Twitter that there was stuff we're going to find to the Athletic Commission about. TFT in Belfort, but it's kind of like a shot on my timeline that they move it and they banned it, and it's a huge day. I hope the athletic commissions follow. I hope the UFC just outright bans it on their contracts. So the next step is going to be very important, but this is a huge day, and I'm very glad to see TRT to me is legal steroids. So I'm glad to see that it's banned, and I want to see what the next step is.
Yeah, it's definitely good that it's banned. There's no doubt about that. You know, you look at it and, you know, you look at these guys who have failed drug tests before, tested positive for raised testosterone levels, and all of a sudden they're getting testosterone replacement therapy, when largely the reason you get that in the first place is because of a failed drug test, you have lower testosterone levels. This, you have an interesting prediction. The UFC is supposed to make an announcement around 1 a.m. Eastern time. We're recording this as of 10 or 11:30 p.m. Chris, why don't you share your thoughts with us?
Yeah, I got this weird inkling that it's either going to be Dana White just kind of going on and handling just some general business, but I really kind of believe that it's going to be Vitor Belfort. I'm kind of thinking they're going to pull out Vitor Belfort out of his fight against Chris Weidman on interviews 130-73, just because Vitor's probably causing a problem. It's going to be hard with the TRT thing to kind of cast a negative shadow over that card. I just think that might be their first move, depending on what happens. I could be wrong. I could be wrong, but I really think that we are going to see Belfort pulled out of that title fight just because it's in Nevada. He's been probably the most scrutinized TRT user, and I don't really see another option.
And he's been the most scrutinized for good reason. But I at least think that the UFC has gone into this knowing that, you know, Vitor may not get licensed for TRT in general, that they need to prove that he can fight in the U.S. because he's not going to get a title shot as long as Chris Weidman is a champion in Brazil. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, there's absolutely no way, just because if Weidman's a champ, why would you have an American defend his belt in Brazil? I mean, I could see it if, like, something with Anderson and that was for a reason, like something happened. But I just generally don't think there's a way they could do it.
But isn't...
Or why would they?
No, but what else can you do? You can't have Vitor fight a bunch of random fights now because he'll never get licensed in Nevada, and it looks like the UFC is going to follow suit, which means I assume he wouldn't get licensed for TRT anywhere, and it would be hypocritical to make that move.
Well, my guess is that they're just going to move his title shot back and figure it out, to be honest. I don't see how they could. It's going to look bad, but in terms of if they could fight that, if it's going to come down to them, I guess that they could just move it back, honestly, and give Jacare the winner of Michael Bisping or something. But Bisping and Kennedy for the next one. I mean, there's ways you could go with it, but I mean, Vitor, TRT or not, I mean, he's earned that title shot. I mean, he has legitimately earned that belt just based off who he's beaten. I mean, you beat Rockhold, Dan Henderson, and Bisping all by finish. I mean, I'm pretty inclined to give you a shot.
Yeah, and it's hard. I can see this happening. I can definitely see it happening. And the other thing I have to look at is Vitor had to have some inkling that this was coming. You know, he had to know, with how outspoken Dana White's been, kind of oddly about it, you know, but what do you do now? And I think you raise a good point. Do they pull him off or do they push it back? Because I assume he's been going through testosterone replacement throughout his fight camp. So what happens? Do you immediately cut him off right now?
I mean, I think you'd have to, right?
And that's where I think moving him back makes a good point.
It's just going to be an interesting thing to see how they handle it, because there's a lot of notable guys who've been on TRT. From what I've read today, Dan Henderson's going to get his TRT exemption when he fights Shogun in Brazil. I mean, it seems like the Brazilian commission is going to approve him. We don't know if New Jersey, if California, if Ohio, if all these other athletic commissions are going to interact with, are going to ban it. So we need to kind of see if this follows suit before, or this was like widespread change, but I hope this is the step. Because, I venture to guess that the UFC holds the highest number of their events in Nevada.
Yeah, and the other thing, do you think this was at all, I don't think it has any correlation, I think it's merely a coincidence, but with the ESPN article that came out, the scrutiny that TRT has come under as of late, do you think this is coincidental, or do you think this has some sort of, there is a relationship between it?
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say yes. I'm not really sure why, but my gut... I mean, what do you think about this? I mean, my gut tells me yes.
I think it's coincidental. I think there's sort of been talking that... You know, I don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but I would like to think that there's been sort of rumblings about this happening before this, and maybe it was a coincidence of timing. But clearly, you know, when the big-name media outlets are starting to put pressure and starting to bring up the ridiculousness that comes with this, you have to make a decision, and I think this is largely what they're doing. It could be related, but I think it's sort of an odd timing where I'm going to say it's merely a coincidence. But the pressure of it caused this talk in the first place.
But media can't affect change. You know, I mean, really, I mean, that media can't affect change, and I think it's partially coincidental, but I really think in the end, like, that might have been the tipping point. When you have ESPN, when it actually decides to do journalism...
Really?
When ESPN decides to do actual journalism, especially on TV, in a long format like that, and it's not like Ray Thompson. By the way, I would love to have... If I could have anyone profile Johnny Hendricks, it would be Ray Thompson. That'd be the greatest read of all time. But... Back on topic, when ESPN puts something into that and they say that, I mean, I think that you kind of have to respond if you're Nevada, right? I mean, I feel like you have to.
You do, and you know, they have a new commissioner, I think, who's trying to make a point that this is going to be different. I hope this is the first of many changes. I hope we start to see better qualified judges. I hope we get to begin to see a lot of things. I hope this is the movement where, you know, big things are going to happen in Nevada. MMA is going to become... It's legitimized, but more than a niche sport, and where we don't have all these controversial decisions. Are you going to have controversy? Yes. But I hope we don't have clear things where we as fans can watch it and go, what the hell were they watching?
Yeah. The thing, again, I guess the cloud hanging over all this is, I mean, I just want to know what's next, you know? What does the UFC do? What is the other state of athletic information? There's a lot of ways that this could go, more than anything. So my antelope, that it's actually is a sign of change in the sport, because, I mean, I don't know about you, but, like, you made a joke, you want to get your tier exemption. I mean, I don't think it'd be fair if, like, I mean, the UFC would have been in a position where, like, if Vitor can't get it in Nevada, like, what if he can go to Illinois and fight in Chicago and get it? Like, would they just have him fight in Illinois? I mean, it needs to be, like, a national thing, I guess, is the next step I'd like to see.
Be a fun free card, because Chicago always gets the free cards on Fox. But, moving on.
Oh, my God. Or, like, put him into, like, have him fight New York, like, if it gets legal. Like, you imagine, like, the hoopla, like, if he, like, TRT gate in New York, dude. Or just, like, send him to Brazil and have him fight, like, I don't know, like, while it is, let's have, like, while it is mail for fun. Have him and have Chael fight every Brazilian on the roster in Brazil.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I can't wait to get to that fight eventually.
125 all the way up to heavyweight. He'll fight Gino. I mean, why not?
But, moving on, the other big news, and some people have made the statement that Gilbert Melendez could be the Curt Flood of mixed martial arts. For those who don't know Curt Flood is the one that started free agency in baseball way back in the 70s. Look it up. It's some very interesting history. Kind of got him blackballed almost, but that's a whole big thing for another time. But he went head-to-head with the UFC. He went head-to-head with Zuffa, and he comes out the winner.
All against all odds.
And you and I were talking about this, too. And I had basically said, and I'm going to stick Gilbert Melendez, you know, for us, it's, we're diehard fans. We cover this, and we cover everyone from a NAMM fan. Hate to criticize you and dog on you for him, but a NAMM.
Dude, my boy is about to win in bantamweight this weekend, so, you know.
From everyone.
He's a contender. They need contenders. He was on Tough. I'm on the NAMM fan title contender train, boy.
But we really are. We cover everyone from guys at the bottom to the very top. You know, and while Gilbert Melendez has fought for a title, he lost his title fight. It was close, but I scored it for Benson. But I made the statement that if he would have gone to Bellator, I think we largely would have forgot about him. But this is a big deal. I'm shocked that the UFC and Zuffa came to this, and I think part of it, from the negotiations that sort of took place, it looks like Gilbert Melendez sort of dragged Bellator along the whole time, like, yeah, we'll go for your offer, why don't you see it, and then they said, here, UFC, take it.
I feel like he was smart in that, though, you know, I mean, he got a lot, he got paid, and not only that, but, like, if you would have went to Bellator, it would have been good for Bellator, but... how many times could he fight? Like, Chuck Mendenhall wrote a really good piece on this. Just from terms of, like, what he can do as a fighter, like, him going to, theoretically, he could go to Bellator, and because of their format, he could get a title fight, but then he'd be fighting, like, Will Brooks. Like, does anyone really want to see Gilbert Melendez fight Will Brooks? Will Brooks probably wouldn't be a top 20 UFC lightweight right now.
No, not at all.
I mean, just in terms of who he can fight, the Pettis fight's amazing. I love that fight.
Granted,
I love him rematching Benson. I love him fighting Habib. I love him fighting, I love him fighting almost all the top guys at 155. So, just in terms of, like, who he's going to be able to fight and what he can do and where he can make it the most exposure, I mean, it's just the UFC is, like, the best place for him.
Now, do you think this makes a legitimate change in the UFC, though? We've been talking change the whole time. Does this make a legitimate change when it comes to fighters getting more money?
I think, in general, it's going to be good for fighters just because Bellator was clearly willing to pony up some cash for this guy. If everyone, because eventually, you know, they're contracts are up and whatnot, and Bellator comes offering like a ton of money, it's going to be tempting because Gilbert Burns has admitted in interviews, like, it's hard. You got to think about your family in these cases. You can't just think, oh, I want to be you, but I need to make money for my family as much as I can because my window is a guy who's going to work for 4 years and retire with a pension. He's not getting a pension. I think it will, but I also think it's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds with some of the guys that aren't quite at Gilbert's level, like top borderline top 10 guys. Like, is the UFC going to be willing to, let's look at lightweight. Let's say let's say TJ Grant becomes a free agent. Are they like just willing to like if they, are they willing to match him? Even though he isn't a huge draw, are they going to be willing to let a guy who's clearly one of the best in the world go just because of money? Or like, I don't know, like even like give me like a top 15 guy in any division, and I want to see if the UFC is going to be willing to like pony up and pay him if felt sort of like
with him. Yeah, it really is a tough call, you know. And I think it is going to come down to the fighter. I hope this does begin to.
Would you take Bellator came offering like $200K? Would you think?
Would I take it? I think Bellator has done way too many shady. I think Bellator has done way too many shady things to where I couldn't trust them.
All right, let's say I'm Bjorn Rebney, and I come to you, and I'm going to offer you $200K just to show. And I'm going to give you a chance at your own like reality show on Spike, and I'm going to you're going to also be like on make an appearance on Fight Master where you get paid for that too. And I can hook you up with certain spots. Do you at least like take that offer, even just to see if the UFC blinks?
I think that raises an interesting point, and I think you do. And maybe this is part of the Bellator push to sort of get off the laughing stock that they have been. You know, you and I have trolled Bellator ruthlessly. We have made it part of our show, basically. I think this legitimizes them. I think it shows how badly they want that pay-per-view, especially. But at the same time, this has to be a gut punch to Bellator where they're just like, damn. We really are the number two. We were just used.
Yeah. Bellator deserves a lot of criticism we dish out, I think, but they do have some good things working for them, but I just want to see if they do this again. And like for example, like let's say a lightweight, I'm just gonna throw like a name for you. Let's say like at lightweight, Bellator offers like a decent sized paycheck to Houston Kabalov. Like, does the UFC match that just to keep a guy in the division when maybe he doesn't have the biggest value in terms of pay-per-view and whatnot? And there's obviously a language barrier, but do they match that because he's clearly a top 15, top 10 guy? Like, what do they do in that situation? What do they do if Mike Pyle's a free agent? Like, what if Bellator comes offering Mike Pyle? Do you match Mike Pyle? What do you do?
That's a tough one because I don't know if they match Mike Pyle. I would say they match Mike Pyle because of the Mike Dolce sort of connection there, and he's had a hell of a run, ton of exciting fights, even if he may never contend for a title. But the man's, you know, he's fought the who's who, and he's brought it out. It really is going to come down to the fighter, where they are in the division. I think if they're on a solid winning streak where you look and you go, this guy can compete for a title soon, or he's going to get a big fight next, they'll match it. But if it's a guy that's coming off a loss, or it's a guy that's maybe 3-1 in the UFC and he has a loss against someone who's, you know, not the elite, I think they still might let him walk.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I kind of want to see that. Agree, do they want to see that happen?
Now, we'll cover this one quickly, and I think it's sort of a joke. You know how I feel about the Diaz brothers. Nate asking out of his contract. What? Thoughts? I don't know. Is this?
It's real goofy.
I mean,
it is real goofy.
What is he? He's someone who the UFC could legitimately say goodbye. You're more of a headache to us. You've lost to the top guys. You know, you have a couple nice wins, but you're not going to fight Gil. You've lost to Benson handily. You got knocked out by Josh Thompson. You know, they got a ton of guys who are. who you look and you know, they probably won't offer what others or him what he's expecting. You say you can't make sense of Nate? I don't think anyone can make sense of Nate. I don't think Nate can make sense of Nate. But moving on, as we wrap up the show, we have fights to pick this week. They are on Fight Pass. I'll tell you what, if you're a true fan, you'll wake up at 5:45. I'm not going to do that, but I'll catch them on the replay. There's a few good fights. Obviously, we don't know much about Tsai and Li Peng. Chris, we know you're going to go with Nam Phan. We don't really need to pick the undercard, but we'll give you that one as a freebie.
Yeah, don't even ask me. I'm picking it. Just don't even hate.
With the main card, though, we have Hatsu Hiyoki, Ivan Menjivar. I think this is, at least for me, this is a relatively easy fight to pick. I'm going with Hatsu Hiyoki. You know, Menjivar's really been on the downtail recently, and I think we're starting to see a guy that's sort of, you know, coming up on the end of his career.
I do too. I think Kyoki's going to smother him on the ground. I think Menjivar's too small for him to be a legit 145er. Kyoki, this is a really easy fight for Kyoki to win him at one point. Remember, when he was the number 2 featherweight in the world, he's going to get back on track really quickly here.
Next fight, we have Matt Mitrione going up against Sean Jordan. You know, I'm not a Mitrione fan, but at least for me, I got to take him. He's got knockout power. I think he can defend the takedown well enough, and I think he's going to finish this fight early.
Yeah, Mitrione's interesting because he's a 82-inch reach, but Jordan hits like a truck. I'm going to go Jordan. I think he's going to roar. I mean, they're going to have a do similarly what Roy Nelson did against Mitrione and just get inside and thought. I'm going to go Sean Jordan KO round 1 or 2.
We differ on that one. Moving to the main event, we have Stun Gun going up against John Hathaway. It's an interesting fight because John Hathaway is 17-1, but I love Dongyeon Kim's style. He can take a beating. He still has power in the late rounds. He just knocked out Eric Silva. I'm going with Stun Gun, and might push him into a top 10 fight.
Yeah, I think he probably deserves a top 10 fight at that point. I also think that Hathaway's been off for a while. Ring rust. He's traveling to a route through like a much farther than Kim is. Kim's going to get this done. I don't think they're competitive because I think Hathaway's at his best when he's the one initiating the grappling. Kim's going to initiate all the grappling. I think he's going to use a lot of judo, get up to control top position. This is going to be a 5-round decision in favor of Dongyeon Kim. I don't think it's going to be very close.
And there you have it. That wraps us up for this week. And before we go, just want to point out to the guys at Bleacher Report how poorly they write articles, how they need to do their research, and how they shouldn't include fighters that have nothing to do with the situation. You subjected a ton of fighters who busted their ass, went through the Ohio Athletic Commission, got all the regulations there for a exhibition, a glorified sparring match, mind you, and you're going to go and put them in an article about unsanctioned MMA events. Do your research. That's my rant for the day, Chris. I could probably go for another 20 minutes. I've been sending tweets relentlessly at them. But
yeah, you're angry.
Deservedly so. Let's hypothetically say that I was to go on a fight, and someone looked at that and said, well, you have this, and this was unsanctioned, and you broke the law, and you did it underground. How many more do we not know about? Because of that article. That makes me look bad. That makes Kyle Rozewski, a professional, look bad. That makes all the guys on the card look bad. Jarrell Hotch, who's 9-1. Devontae Smith makes everyone in that situation look bad for doing nothing wrong.
Yep, pretty much.
But
it's reckless. I mean, it's a reckless use of potential to post smart things on the internet. And as much as I hate Bleacher Report, they have a lot of writers I really like, and not just in MMA. Dundas in MMA is good. Bodner's pretty solid. And they have one of my favorite basketball writers in Howard Beck, who used to work for the New York Times, mind you. So, as much as their slideshows can go die in a hole, they do have some talent over there, but it's kind of a reckless use of the internet to say things like they said.
And the issue is,
but the smoker.
At least for me, the issue is, they rely on hits. So you get uneducated writers, you get guys who are just looking to get their views up, their page views up, because that's how Bleacher Report proves their legitimacy. That's how they started proving their legitimacy. So for the three good writers that they may have, there's 100 other ones that are unqualified and make them look like fools. And it was reckless power of the fact that Bleacher Report is now viewed as a legitimate source for a lot of things.
Yep. Which is crazy if you think about it.
However, that wraps us up. You can check Chris out on Twitter at CWMWrite. He writes for Backdrop and a ton of other sites.
Only two now. I have a life now. I may not sleep as much, but because I'm actually doing all my homework now, but I'm only two sites now, so I'm not, like, killing myself.
Write down Euclid also. You can check me out on Twitter at Nikolai_Gianti. My writing's at Maximum Fighting, MaximumFighting.com. We're not affiliated with them when it comes to this podcast. My views don't express their views. This is me on my own. This is Chris on his own. You can check us out next week. And by the way, for those wondering, I won my fight. I look as pretty as ever. Or as ugly as ever.
Didn't get I think hit. You look pretty, don't worry.
Oh, yeah. We'll see you guys next week.